Welcome to the Fresnolandia podcast. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom.
We have a great show for you today. First, we're going to answer some questions that people sent in on Instagram. We're also going to reveal our first book club. We're going to talk about a number of stories in the news, including the Bitwise plea deal, the Measure P arts grants, as well as Fresno's guaranteed basic income program. And then we'll close with what we're loving this week.
We have a number of questions that we're going to answer, and the first one came from one of our readers on Instagram, and they wanted to know where the hidden gems are in Fresno. So Jordan, where are your hidden gems?
I had some apprehension sharing this hidden gem because I love it so much, in part because it's so quiet. And so sharing it seems to undercut part of why I love it, but I'm still going to share it. In the summers, I love to float. And when I first moved here, my wife would take me with her friends to part of the Kings River near Reedley, where a lot of people float. And I enjoyed it, but there were some challenges with it. Parking, it could be very slow at points. And then a couple years ago, I think it was during the pandemic, we discovered that you can float on the San Joaquin River. There's a little spot near the Friant Dam where you can park. And there's a path that takes you right down to the river. And you can float from there and get out in the Lost Lake campground, and it's about a 2 to 3 hour float. There's some fun little rapids in it, but for the most part, it's leisurely, enjoyable. There's people all around. There's waterfowl. There's just great time sitting on the river, take a drink with you, enjoy the sun. It's a great time, and it's one of the things I look forward to about summer in Fresno.
That sounds amazing. I grew up floating a lot on the Kings River, and I have my own little spots that I'm used to going to on the Kings. But you're right. The parking is such a huge issue.
Mm-hmm. You just ended up parking in someone's driveway, and I was never comfortable with that. I just wanted something that was a little bit more easy access, and that's what the San Joaquin is.
Yeah.
What's a hidden gem for you?
Okay, so I'm going to stay with the outdoor theme since you've set that tone, and there's many genres of hidden gems, so maybe in different episodes we'll have to go into different food hidden gems, etc. But since we're sticking with the outdoors, one of my favorite hikes in the Fresno area, it's not exactly Fresno, but Fresno County, is a hike called Indian Pools. Have you done Indian Pools before?
I have not.
Yeah, so it's you access it through the parking lot of China Peak.
Okay.
So you go, once you get to China Peak, so just past Shaver on the way to Huntington off the 168, you drive through the parking lot towards the employee housing that they have at China Peak. And then there's a tiny little trailhead at the end of the parking lot. And it's this wonderful hike. It's about 7 miles round trip. So it's a hike. And you don't have to do the whole thing, the there and back type of hike. But the whole way you're hiking along a creek that has little pools that you swimming pools that you can swim in. And so you hike and then you swim, you hike and you swim. It's lovely. It's kid friendly. I love it.
That sounds fantastic. And I'm going to add that to my list. Another question we received on Instagram is a question about Sam's Deli, which I'm embarrassed to say I've never been to. And the person on Instagram was asking if it's moving. What did you find out, Donnie?
Yeah, so we had our student intern at Fresnoland, Charlotte Burks, look into this question. And there had been some media reports a couple of months ago back in February about that were sharing some rumors around Sam's moving up to North Fresno into the Villaggio Shopping Center, which is at River Park. It's on Blackstone and Neese. And so Charlotte looked into it. She called the manager at Sam's Deli. And it's true. They have signed a lease. They are opening a second location up at River Park, but have no plans to close the first location, the original location. That's what they told Charlotte. I'm a big Sam's fan, have been going to Sam's as long as I remember living in Fresno for the last decade plus. It is the best Italian sandwich that you can get in Fresno. So you have to go there.
Okay, two questions. One, should I be embarrassed that I haven't been there yet?
Yes, you should
be.
Okay,
all right, so that one was awesome.
There is literally a sign at the airport. I just flew back into Fresno a few weeks ago, and when you're getting off the plane, there's literally a sign at the airport that says that Sam's is ranked in the top 100 best restaurants to visit in the U.S. according to Yelp. You've got to go. And it's not just for the sandwiches. The sandwiches are excellent, but then their wine selection is wonderful. Mm. They have a whole market and deli that you can get different pasta salads and different drinks and different snacks. And a lot of it is from Italy. I was in Italy last year and there was a few different food items that you can only get at Sam's that you can also, that I saw in Italy. So that was really fun. And I lived for a little bit in Brooklyn, and it felt, Sam's very much feels like the type of deli you would see in like certain neighborhoods in Brooklyn.
Fantastic. I have a homework assignment. What's your favorite sandwich at Sam's Deli?
Oh, I never remember the name. But it's like salami, and it's prosciutto, and it's provolone. And it's just like a classic deli sandwich, and I honestly cannot remember the name. I have to look it up.
Fantastic.
But all I have to say on the Sam's issue is this. Sam's, please don't leave Central Fresno. Don't be the restaurants that open up a North Fresno location, then decide that North Fresno is so much better than Central and South Fresno and close the South Fresno location. We've seen other restaurants do that. We're not going to name names right now, but that does happen. And those of us who live south of Shaw don't appreciate it. So please keep the original location.
Yeah. Two's always better than one, right?
Absolutely.
Here at Fresnolandia, one thing that we wanted to do going forward was have regular book clubs. And our first book club we're excited to announce is Mas Masumoto's new book, Secret Harvests, A Hidden Story of Separation and the Resilience of a Farm Family. I actually read this book a few months ago and loved it so much. I shared it with Donnie and proposed it being our first book club, in part because it connects so many different to so many different parts of Fresno. Mas Masumoto discovered he had a lost aunt living just a few miles away from his farm in Del Rey, and his family had lost touch with her and didn't even know she was alive. It's a fantastic story about family secrets, shame, the relationship that we have with our family members who have illness. How did she survive, and how was she kept hidden? These are a number of the questions that Mas seeks to answer in this fantastic book. What's exciting about this book club is that Mas Masumoto is going to be joining us, and we will be taking questions from you. And Donnie, how can people put in questions for this book club if they're interested in contributing?
Yeah, so you can send us an email to tips@fresnoland.org. You can text us or leave a voicemail to 559-202-3656.
The book club episode will be on August 19th, about a month from now. That gives you plenty of time to buy the book and read it. Please join us in reading this fantastic book.
All right, for our next segment, we're going to dive into some meaty stories from this last week. And here with us to talk about the news of the week is Fresnoland's labor and economy reporter, Juliana Morano.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. So first, we're going to talk about Bitwise, a story that has captivated many of us in Fresno and beyond for the last year plus since they initially announced some furloughs in Memorial Day of 2023. And this last week, former co-CEOs Jake Soberall and Irma Olguin Jr. officially pled guilty to two charges of wire fraud and conspiracy to commit wire fraud. And Juliana, you've been covering this story over the last several months since joining Fresnoland. You covered the plea deal. Tell us, how did we get here and how did this story unfold over the last several months?
Yeah, so Donnie already mentioned this all started to unravel on Memorial Day last year, when Jake and Irma abruptly announced to all their employees they were all being furloughed. A couple weeks later, they were all laid off.
This was like 900 employees?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Approximately 600 in Fresno, and then they also had offices around the country. 600 tech jobs in Fresno disappeared virtually overnight when that announcement was made. And that same month in June, Bitwise filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy as well.
And then what was the legal proceedings that happened from there?
It's multi-pronged. There's the bankruptcy case. There are many civil suits against the company and the CEOs and so on and so forth. The bankruptcy is still pending. But then also what came to a head this week was the criminal case against the ex-CEOs.
Okay. And what were they charged with specifically?
One count each of conspiracy to commit wire fraud and then wire fraud as well. And that's what they pled guilty to.
And they didn't plead guilty initially, right?
They pled
not guilty. Do we know why they changed their plea?
It seems to be the result of successful negotiations between their attorneys and federal prosecutors. And out of this deal, the federal prosecutors agreed to recommend the shorter end of prison time in exchange for them pleading
guilty. So do we have a sense at this point of how long prison time will be for them?
So the maximum sentence that each of those two charges carry is 20 years.
For each charge?
Yes.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
As well as a fine of $250,000, but they're being expected to pay a lot more than that. In the plea deal, it says that the defendants are allowed to argue for whatever sentence it applies under the criminal code, but they were allowed to ask for no less than 5 years. However, all of this is ultimately up to a judge to decide, and they could go against the recommendations.
Yeah. And well, so this will all come to a head at the November 6th sentencing hearing?
Yes. Okay. That's when it's been scheduled.
And let's talk a little bit about the restitution that they're expected to pay. So your story talked about how they're going to have to pay up to $115 million in restitution.
Correct.
Where does that money come from? Who gets paid? How does this work?
That's everyone's question right now. I think a lot of ex-employees are very skeptical they'll ever see another dollar from their former CEOs. However, we might get some answers in the next 3 weeks when the former CEOs are required to share financial disclosures with the court.
What does that mean?
They have to show their assets. We should be able to access that and report on it.
Okay, interesting. You mentioned accounts of wire fraud and conspiracy to commit wire fraud. What did they actually do wrong?
Yeah, so they, at least in this plea deal, have been accused of misrepresenting the company's finances and lying to investors through falsifying documents and bank statements. That's what they've been accused of.
So they were taking financial statements from their company, doctoring them to look differently, then presenting to investors a different financial picture in order to get money. And then what did they spend the money on once they were able to get that investment to their company?
Yeah, that's the thing. They have not been accused of, or at least so far in this criminal case, of using this money to buy like island resort homes or things like that. The plea deal says that the money that they lied to obtain went toward payroll and just the normal course of business.
Irma and Jake put out a statement via an open letter. For anyone who's familiar with Bitwise, that is their preferred form of communication with the public.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the first open letter they've put out.
It's also important to say that some people are saying, and they're even saying in the letter, we're sorry we couldn't do this sooner. It's obvious why they couldn't do this, because they needed to finish the legal proceedings first.
Yes. So Juliana, you have been talking to a lot of former employees at Bitwise over the last few months. You had a story that came out at the end of May on the year anniversary of Bitwise announcing the furloughs. What's been the general read from the workers that you, former employees that you've talked to, about Jake and Irma, and how do you think that this statement will be received by a lot of them?
Yeah, I'd say there are mixed attitudes toward them. Some people never want to speak to them again and want to move on with their lives. Others have harsh words to say to them after they abruptly lost their jobs and also had to deal with the financial repercussions and emotional repercussions of that for months, and that continues to this day. Not everyone I've talked to has actually found full-time employment again. In terms of how this statement will be received, I think some people will not see it as adequate. Some people will question the timing of it, the authenticity. That's up to every person to decide, but yeah, there have been some responses to the post since they shared it on social media already. And I think the skepticism of employees about their authenticity is evident there. While others, one who shares a last name with Irma, who I believe is their relative, kind of defended them in a response. It'll still be mixed. It's 900 people weighing in now.
And then what's the date that we are going to see the assets?
They are required to complete that within 3 weeks of their change of plea hearing, so 3 weeks of Wednesday.
Okay. All right. We'll stay tuned for that. Donnie, how do you feel about the open letter?
This is not my first rodeo with a Bitwise open letter. Look, I didn't work there, mm-hmm. so I don't have the same impact and relationships that a lot of people who are reading that have today, and the complication of relationships and what that meant financially for a lot of people. like so many people in Fresno, we all wanted Bitwise to succeed. We all wanted to elevate Fresno on the map in terms of being a hub for a burgeoning tech economy, to grow a type of job that had a lot more financial promise, that could lure in more talent and also just build more talent here in the Central Valley. So yeah, I rode that optimism wave, and your muted positivity comment from our first episode, if I can make a reference back to that, I think that what I've just learned over the years and watching how they moved and operated and didn't always deliver on the promises that they made to the community, and I've seen a lot of those promises come and go, and I just feel like it's really made a skeptic out of me and a skeptic out of a lot of people who want so badly for Fresno to succeed, but also are really fearful of people who put out visions that can't deliver. And there's a lot to be said that maybe we'll talk about later around what we could have seen early on that would have caused us, what were the early red flags that could have caused us to, as a community, to have a lot more questions. But we all want to support that vision of Fresno being a more successful place. And I think it's just sad. It's just sad.
Yeah, I think it's definitely in the category of a tragedy. I will say, I think beyond just the restitution, there's an additional element. A few weeks ago, I recorded a podcast with Danny Bernstein, who is the founder of Hawk Tower, which is a venture capital group in town. And we talked about the Bitwise hangover, and one of the things he said is that investors are a lot more cautious after Bitwise investing in tech startups in the Valley. And so there's the money that they stole from investors and other people. But then there's also the damage to the brand of Fresno that is going to result in lost revenue for the Valley. And so this has legs and it extends. And I fully understand after this, the desire of those in the Valley to move on. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to be honest about what happened first before we move on.
And I don't think that we fully grappled as a community with that conversation yet. I think we tend to be a place that we have such a huge chip on our shoulder in terms of our reputation and how we think we're perceived by other places in California, inferiority complex as part of inland California, that I think anytime someone has a shiny object that could make us look better as a community, or has a really interesting project that could make us seem as cool as LA or San Francisco or the Bay, we lob onto it without really asking hard questions. And I feel like it's asking the hard questions should not be perceived as a sign that you don't want good things to happen.
Yeah, it's just due diligence. And we need to do due diligence
Correct. On
anyone that shows up with big promises.
Yes.
So the next thing we're going to talk about is the Measure P Arts Grants. And before we get into it, I just need to disclose my relationship to this. I'm on the board of the Fresno Philharmonic, and we have been applying for a Measure P Arts Grant to help fund the Philharmonic. And then, Donnie, you also have a relationship with Measure P as well?
I do. Fresno Land does not receive any Measure P funding, nor have we applied for any Measure P funding. But before I became a journalist back in 2018, I was one of the co-authors of the Measure P ballot measure.
Okay. Juliana, there's been a lot going on, and the Measure P grants got derailed through an appeals process. Can you describe how individual organizations were selected for grants and then why this appeal process was initiated?
Yes, for sure. The City Council approved grant guidelines that the Parks, Recreation, and Arts Commission had come up with, which would help determine eligibility for the organizations that applied to this competitive grant program. Then applications opened shortly thereafter, were open through March. Panels reviewed those applications. Then the Fresno Arts Council in May presented the commission I mentioned earlier, Parks, Recreation, and Arts, with funding recommendations based on that kind of review process. So in May, the commission approved those funding recommendations. It totaled around $8.6 million, and they were recommending funding for roughly 72% of the applications that they received, which was over 100. then, and after that, the organizations that were supposed to, that had been awarded funding, were notified, you're getting this funding. And those notices stated that the grant period would begin July 1st. So that created the expectation that these organizations would get that money July 1. However, in June 17th at another commission meeting, the city's parks director shared this statement and deferred to the city attorney if there were further questions, but said that there had been a procedural issue with the grant process and said that before anything could proceed, they had to cure that issue.
And did they say at that point what the procedural issue was?
They did not. And we have gotten no additional details. Fresno Land did contact the city attorney's office for an explanation of what that is, but they don't respond to us in general and did not for this story. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have an answer to that. Then that was when things became confusing. Some of the commissioners I spoke with also don't understand anything beyond what the parks director shared with the commission and were confused themselves about the delay to the process. At a July 1st meeting, that same commission ultimately at the end of the meeting voted to delay the process even further, and that was scheduled for the same day that people were expecting to get their money. So they were expecting that, then told at that meeting, actually, we're going to maybe take this up at the next meeting. I will also add that at the July 1st meeting, the Fresno Arts Council presented the commission with additional information about the recommended grant recipients. And that included a breakdown, according to council district, of how much money recipients were receiving based on council district. And that was when some people on the commission raised some equity concerns about the funding recommendations. Specifically, they were concerned to see that District 5, which represents Southeast Fresno, is only receiving around 3% of the total $8.6 million, whereas Council District 3, which covers Tower, downtown, parts of Southwest Fresno, was receiving the largest share of the funding pie, which was around 45%.
Is that due to the fact that there's just more arts organizations concentrated in those areas, or is, proportionally, do we see a difference there?
So that was how the Fresno Arts Council president responded to that concern. She shared in the July 1st meeting, and that's Lilia Gonzalez-Chavez. She shared that, one, a lot of arts organizations and nonprofits have their headquarters in downtown Fresno. So that's not super surprising. The cultural arts district for the city of Fresno is also contained within that council district. So those are some factors that kind of led to that overrepresentation that they saw. But at the same time, other commissioners were saying that particularly District 5, this like typically disinvested part of the city, deserves to see a greater share of this funding, and this is the kind of investment they've been looking for and wanting from the city. So there are different takes on the disparities.
But for now, the grants have been approved.
Yes.
Of the original organizations who were recommended to receive funding.
Yes. Despite these delays and these additional questions raised that felt like they were being raised at the last minute at a July 15th meeting, so Monday of this week, the commission voted to approve the original recommendations that some people thought they had already definitively approved. I'll also add that over 40 people from mostly organizations that were expecting to receive funding on July 1st showed up to that meeting and talked about the impacts this delay was having on them.
Yeah. And what's interesting to me about this debate is the equity questions are worthwhile having. And as a person who was involved in the drafting of Measure P, the questions around geographic equity mm-hmm. for a ballot measure designed to raise money for parks and recreation and arts activities was like very front and center in those dialogues. And it makes sense to me that arts organizations, just by the nature of what they do, their service area is not necessarily correlated to their headquarters.
Yes. Chavez of the Fresno Arts Council also shared that many of these organizations that may be headquartered in downtown Fresno serve people all over the city and are centrally located for that reason.
Yeah. Juliana, you've reported in the past on what the emergence of the Measure P arts funding, which, by the way, to our listeners, this is the first time in at least recent history the city of Fresno has had dedicated funding to the arts that is publicly funded through the Measure P ballot measure. It's a tax. And it's a huge monumental change for the arts community. And so there have been these debates around what types of arts should we be supporting in Fresno? Should we be using the money to support legacy organizations that have been around for a long time that may also have perhaps more white and affluent audiences? Should we be supporting more emerging artists and arts organizations who serve a different, the emerging diversity of Fresno? So how has that debate played out in all of this?
Yeah, I think that's something the community has been hearing from artists and arts-based organizations for a while. They don't want, or this funding has the potential to be transformative for arts here, but it has to be equitably distributed. And there is that tension between larger established organizations that still do need more in order to function in the city and have never received this kind of local investment. But then at the same time, there are newer organizations that could expand what they're doing and serve a bigger audience if they were recipients of this. Part of how the Fresno Arts Council and the commission and organizers tried to address that was by establishing multiple categories of awards, but some of them were labeled as or set aside for what were called emerging organizations. So there were dedicated categories within these guidelines that set aside funding for nonprofits with budgets under $50,000 annually. So that was how, in this round, the Fresno Arts Council tried to respond to that concern. But obviously, from what happened this past month, that concern remains. And I think the hope is that, so this funding exists for the life of Measure P, which is 30 years. I think the hope is that each time they will get better, but that it doesn't mean there wasn't a lot of heartache in this first year.
Okay. And then when is the money actually going to be distributed? Do we know this?
I don't. I just know that it's approved. I believe that there's like a 10-day window after the approval of these grant recommendations for people to appeal who think they should have received it but didn't. That appeal process was supposed to have already happened, but from what I understand, I think it was rendered null and void when the parks director said there was this procedural issue with the first attempted approval of the recommendations.
Okay. Stay tuned. We'll provide you more updates on Measure P as we hear them. And let's jump to our next segment, which is an exciting new program in Fresno, which is Fresno's first guaranteed basic income pilot. I lived in Stockton, and while I didn't live there when they piloted their UBI program, which was from 2019 to 2021, I paid close attention to it as someone that had lived in the city for just a year, but was curious about how it would roll out. There was a couple things about their program. Their program selected 125 people to receive $500 a month for 24 months, no strings attached. Their program was privately funded, primarily through philanthropic organizations, and it had really good results. In terms of full-time employment among the recipients, that rose from 28 to 40%. Recipients also reported being better able to pay off debt and cover unexpected expenses like medical issues. And there was a marked improved, and this is self-reporting obviously, participants experiencing less anxiety, depression, and other forms of mental illness. So I was excited to see that Fresno was going to be experimenting with this. Juliana, what are the specifics here?
Sure. So it definitely has many things in common with Stockton's pilot. It's a little bit larger. It's 150 families. 75 are from a Southwest Fresno zip code, and 75 are from Huron, which is a rural community in Fresno County. Yeah, so 75 from each of those respective areas. They're also receiving $500 monthly stipends. The program is funded for 1 year. So the first payments just went out July 15th, and they'll continue through next summer. It's also being philanthropically funded Fresno tried to get funding from the state of California. In 2021, the Newsom administration announced $35 million for guaranteed basic income pilots around the country. Fresno applied, ultimately it was denied. So the Fresno Economic Opportunities Commission, which has taken the lead on pursuing this program, they assembled donors instead for so that they could still roll out a pilot here.
Juliana, what are the organizers of this hoping to see over the next several months as this rolls out?
Yeah, so Fresno State's Center for Community Voices team is taking the lead on evaluating this program. We can expect a full report from them in fall of 2025 is when they're estimating. But one thing that came up when I was talking to Amber Crowell, who's helping lead these efforts to evaluate the program, is that so they've been meeting with these 150 families, and so far they're hearing that they're using the funding to buy new clothes for their children before the start of school, or to address, with Fresno's extreme heat right now, car trouble and different emergencies that have come out of that. And she noted that these are very like short-term, immediate effects or trouble or issues that they're trying to address with this additional money in their pocket each month. But the hope is that as this money becomes this reliable source of income for a year, they hope to see people have the breathing room to think more about the future, think about education opportunities, training opportunities, do more of the long-term planning that they will have the space to do with additional income.
That's really interesting to hear. I know I've tried to follow the literature and the debates around basic income pilots across the U.S., certainly for the last few years as they become more popular. I read a book called Give People Money by Annie Lowry. She's a staff writer at The Atlantic, and it's all about these different pilots and how they work. So I'm really interested to see how it plays out in Fresno. I can't wait to see the data. Just a note for our readers, Amber Crowell, who Juliana just mentioned, is on our board of directors, but our board does not have any influence whatsoever over editorial content. Just to note that for the audience.
We close this podcast in the same place every week with what we're loving. We're going to start with our guest, Juliana. What are you loving this week?
So I'm addicted to 90s television. I just finished The Sopranos. I'm rewatching Sex and the City. I'm a huge Buffy fan. So this week I just started The X-Files. So I'm excited to add that to my 90s TV repertory.
Oh, The X-Files. I'm one of those people that's obsessed with all things UFO or UAP, or I think they have a new, they just keep changing the acronym to confuse us. I'm obsessed with this stuff. And how does X-Files hold up in terms of not just like the rubber costumes, but like in terms of the themes and the different things in the show?
I think Buffy prepared me well for like weird special effects, like outdated special effects. So that doesn't bother me. I think I've been acclimated. I think it's really interesting, particularly David Duchovny's character, like his relationship with UFOs. I'm really interested to see if we ever get definitive answers about like his backstory and what influenced him to be interested in these kind of supernatural occurrences. So far, I don't think I've been taken aback by anything. It seems like it's aged somewhat well, but yeah, I'm only a few episodes in, so I might be very wrong. I'll see.
We'll get a report back on that. Donnie, what are you loving this week?
So listeners of this podcast will quickly discover that I am the most basic person of all time. And so my obsession this week is Icelandic yogurt. It is amazing. I went to Whole Foods this week and I bought an insane amount of Icelandic yogurt.
What makes it different than my regular Greek yogurt off the shelf?
It's thicker. If you could imagine, thicker than Greek yogurt. And I was a big Greek yogurt.
Is this like a granola and fruit situation?
No.
Or how are you consuming it?
Because I normally with Greek yogurt, it's Greek yogurt, granola, sliced up peach or strawberries, whatever. This needs nothing. It's just...
You just eat it by itself?
Yes. The vanilla bean skyr Icelandic yogurt. It's phenomenal. It's panna cotta. It's amazing.
Wow.
I know. I love it so much. It gets me going through the week. I need nothing else.
Yeah, that's the simple things. And it's funny that you brought that up because mine is also a little bit more directly a dessert. What I'm loving this week is making my own ice cream. I had a friend in Visalia who made her own ice cream, and she was describing to me a few years ago, and I never thought about making it. It always felt like it was going to be involved and I wouldn't get the texture. Found the right recipe and really got my process down. It's incredible how easy it becomes.
Do you have an ice cream maker?
So I have, like, I think I have the Cuisinart from my wedding registry.
That's what I have.
I think I'm pretty sure it's 10 years old and works like a champ. Yeah, so I make the custard, then I chill it in the fridge overnight, and then churn it the next day, and then throw in whatever I can find in my freezer, either cookie dough balls or chocolate chips. But the favorite thing right now in my household is powdered peanut butter. So it's peanut butter that's been dehydrated and powdered, and you churn it into the actual custard, and then it just gets peanut butter flavor. And then we got a little crazy, and we started pouring additional peanut butter in addition to the peanut butter powder.
That's intense.
Yeah, it's a lot of peanut butter, but we're a peanut butter family, so that's what it is.
Very good.
Yeah, so I'd encourage you, if you've ever thought about experimenting and trying to make your own ice cream, it is worth it. And that's all we have for you today. Thank you for listening. We'll have our next episode out a week from today, next Monday. And that's all from us.
Today's podcast was co-hosted by Jordan and Donnie. Our guest is Juliana Murano. It was edited and mixed by Jordan Maddox. The music comes from local band Stateless Rat. The art for our podcast comes from Von Bellanon. And we recorded this at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno.